Bandwidth for Cloth Talk is provided by the Scout History Project. Join us at the Scout History Project at www.scouthistory.net. Cloth Talk, number 23, Hawk Day. Welcome to Cloth Talk. I'm Tim Hall, and here online with me is Ben Killen. Ben, what's up?
Hey, not a lot, Tim. Just still hanging out here in the Big Apple. Lately, I've been, if people know me, they know that I'm kind of like a gadget. I have an addiction to gadgets. If I have a vice, it's spending money on electronic things. And lately, I've been checking out the new Canon HV20 camcorder that's coming out in April. I'm pretty excited about it. So I don't know. I might be selling the one I have now. I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, it better be able to play back with the tapes you've got.
Yeah, I don't know. Most of that stuff I have digitally backed up anyway. So,
oh, cool.
I can just overdub those. But, you know, that's not talking cloth. So
I know you and the gadgets. If you recommend it, it's probably a pretty good gadget. Well, coming up later in the show here, hopefully we will have someone that Ben and I know. He's Lodge Chief, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about his activities as Lodge Chief and his personal story of how he got involved in the order and some of his favorite patches from his lodge and the events perhaps that they remind him of. And I tell you, some of it is stuff that we can all identify with if you've ever been in a LEC meeting or run for office or anything like that that gets your heart beating a little quick. And those are the kind of memories that a lot of patches always bring back to me, especially when I'm going through my old lodges issues that happened to come out when I was chief. Also, John Pinnell joins us. And as always, John has his finger on the pulse of the collecting community, and we can't wait to hear from John. Brandon Ellis has a TOR update and review with us. Brandon's always on the lookout for all the traderies and the dates and the locations that they will be. So we look forward to hearing from Brandon.
One thing, too, on that TOR update, I should apologize to everyone and Brandon also because I forgot to put a link to his TOR page in the show notes last week. So I'm going to fix that up this week and make sure that we don't forget about that because his page that he's created there in the wiki is an excellent resource and definitely encourage you to go to our webpage, scouthistory.net, and check that out.
Hey, Ben, one thing I did want to talk to you about is there is a production, a little one-minute production called ISASH. And why don't you just fill us in on the details of that? Start at the beginning of it, and I'll prompt you if you need it. Somehow I doubt you do.
Oh, okay. Well, ISASH, to be honest, to go all the way back to the beginning, I don't remember exactly when it started, but I know it was at one of our CUSA events, and me and you, Tim, and Chris Brightwell, and a lot of the Cloth Talk guys, you know, and some other people are really involved in our shows committee in the CUSA Lodge, and we're always kind of brainstorming ways to really kind of push the envelope and do things that we've never done before and, you know, just kind of raise the bar for what we do in our own lodge shows and also sort of create things that can be universal and used, you know, by any lodge or any OA function, anything like that. So the idea came about is, as probably most of our listeners know, we're all really big Apple computer fans. And so the iPod ads with the silhouetted characters dancing around iPods, and you can see the only thing that's in white is, of course, the iPod and then the earbuds, headphones for the iPod. And they're really cool. They're really cool looking, stylistic. And we thought, wow, wouldn't it be cool if there was a commercial for OA, but instead of people dancing around with an iPod, it was Scouts and OA members dance, or not dancing around, but either doing service work, and even actually some people doing Native American dance. But they were silhouetted, but the only part you could see would be the stash. And, oh, wow, that's awesome. You know, we'd never be really cool, though. So the idea kind of, you know, just went to the back burner, and, you know, we talked about it some more. But then eventually, one sort of hobby of mine that's outside of collecting patches and graphic design is also getting into visual effects and video effects and animation and stuff like that. So this is something that in my spare time I kind of learned about and try to learn technique. I sort of had this idea in the back of my head, and I started to realize that maybe it wouldn't be quite an impossibility after all. So we sort of talked about it some more, and we're like, you know, this would really work. And we learned the techniques that it takes to sort of create those iPod commercials, and we decided, why not? Let's try it. So Tim, you helped out and bought big sheets of canvas, and we got Kermit the Frog green paint and painted them.
Yeah, that was kind of funny, because the jeans that I painted those things in, I'm wearing right now.
That's weird. So you have probably Kermit the Frog green spots of paint on your blue jeans right now. But no, so what we created is, in the video industry, it's called a green screen, and it's the same thing that like a weatherman at the local news station would stand in front of, and then digital video stream, and the computers, they put that map of the weather digitally where the screen is, and he can point around, and in reality he's just pointing at a blank green wall, but when we see it on TV it looks like he's pointing at the map, and it's really cool. It's actually technology that's been around for a long time, and recently it's just gotten even more and more sophisticated. So basically that's what we did on a but minimal or almost zero budget. We created our own green screen and set it up at an OA event. Actually, the first annual American Indian Seminar that our chief was talking about. And we set it up. I sort of had planned it all out in my head, and we filmed everything at that event. And people kind of would come around, and they thought we were crazy. But by now, I think they're used to us Coosa Shows guys just kind of doing our own thing, and they're like, they're in there, they've got this green wall set up, and they're filming, and they're asking people to come in. So they just thought we were crazy. But we filmed it all then, and I actually came to Alabama for that event, and then brought it all back here, all the tapes and everything, and worked on it, and sort of learned as I went, and created this video. And I'm really happy with how it turned out. I learned a lot of really cool techniques that I've known about, but have just not ever had a chance to really kind of get my hands on. So it turned out really good. And our plan is, we have a few other things in production right now that are still kind of under the hat. But our plan is to sort of develop a DVD or a series of these type videos that any lodge could just take and drop in and show at their lodge events or anything like that, maybe at an ordeal after all the candidates have gone through, just to kind of show, you know, hey, this is some of the cooler stuff that you can do in the OA and stuff like that. So, but if you want to check it out now, you can simply go on to YouTube. That's YouTube.com, and just type in iSash, I-S-A-S-H, and it's actually the only thing that pops up, and you can check it out. It's got a low-res version there, but we actually, when we did this project, we decided we wanted it to sort of have a little bit of flexibility, so it's actually recorded and completely finished in HD, which is very high definition, high resolution video. And the other cool tidbit about this video is it was actually premiered at the theme show at NOAC 2006. So imagine my sort of pride and just like excitement to get to see my video that I had spent hundreds of hours working on, and everyone in Coosa had helped out with, and all the people that you see on the screen are all, and how cool that was to see that in front of, you know, thousands of airmen in the big arena at NOAC this year. It was really cool, and I think people really enjoyed it, and I know I did. But if you want to check it out, you know, go onto YouTube and type in ISASH, and it'll pop up, and you can just click on it and watch it right there. And if you'd like to use it for your event, send us an email. You can email me, Ben, at clothtalk.com, and I will make sure that you get fixed up, higher resolution version that, you know, will play better on a big screen.
Cool. Very cool. Yes, I went with you down into the bowels of NOAC shows, and once I realized that the arena was air-conditioned, you know, I would have sat there and waited for you forever. It didn't matter. That was...
it was very hot at this NOAC, and... I know that the national shows guys, they've got a lot of stuff to get done, but they got a pretty nice setup hanging out in the arena all the time. So I don't know, maybe one of these days CUSA shows will sort of help out and lend a hand to all the national shows guys.
Well, thanks, Ben. ISASH is currently available on YouTube. Well, you know, Ben, one thing that we didn't get is any messages on our answering machine. I expected someone to have made that wonderful trade at 2 o'clock in the morning and just couldn't, you know, hold their horses any longer or didn't want to write it an email and wanted us to tell a story. If you want to tell a story about any of your scouting experiences, here's where you can do it. Call 24/7 at 415-287-3263. That's the Cloth Talk Hotline. Once again, 415-287-3263. And that's an answering machine where you can absolutely leave your message, leave your story, and we'll check it out. And you can even ask a question. Hey, we'll set all the our resources in motion trying to figure out an answer to your question. And if not, we'll make it up. But once again, if you got your pencil and paper ready, here's that number. 415-287-3263. 415-287-3263 for the Cloth Talk Hotline. Ben, give us a quick lesson on how to find out when a new Cloth Talk is available.
Well, there's several ways to do it, actually. The easiest way is to actually sign up. You go directly to our website, and you can listen to all of our episodes that we have ever released, or you can listen to them right there on the site. And, as I said, the most easy way is to just sort of make a mental note every 2 weeks on Monday to check it out. Because we usually post our new episodes every 2 weeks on Sunday, and so Monday you could just make a mental note to check it out. The other way is you could sign up for our e-newsletter, and it's really easy to do. You just, on the Cloth Talk website, you just go to clothtalk.com or scouthistory.net and click on the little Cloth Talk merit badge there, and on the page on the left-hand side at the bottom of the navigation, in a little box where you can type in your email address and hit enter, it'll bring up this little confirmation screen, and you hit, you know, say, do this thing, and okay. And we're not going to spam you. We're not going to send you, whatever. We just are going to send you an email every 2 weeks when we post a new episode, and that way you'll be reminded to check out the website. If you're like me, I have trouble sometimes remembering things I need to do. And so that way it sort of takes the hard part out of it, and you just get in. You can check out that episode. So that's easy. Also, you can subscribe through iTunes. Just go into the iTunes music store and type in Cloth Talk. And last time I checked, it's just the first result that comes up right there. So it's really easy. And you just click subscribe. It's free. And iTunes will download it every 2 weeks. And you can connect that to your iPod if you have one, and listen to it on the go. But you don't have to. iTunes is a free download from Apple's website, and you can just listen to it on your Windows or Mac computer, without a problem.
So today I'm giving a website review for oasections.com, which tells everything about not just your section, but if you want to know anything about the other sections around you or the other sections halfway across the country. The website has a very helpful map that shows the four different regions along with the Far East and other sections outside of the U.S. And you click on one of the regions and it shows you the names of every section. So you find a section and you click it, and it tells you the lodges in each section, which is average of 5 to 7. And it doesn't just tell the lodges, it tells the websites for the lodges and the websites for the councils of the lodges, which is helpful if you need to find out any information about a certain lodge. The website isn't just for OA sections and the regions. It also has a history grid, which dates back to 1941, which is very helpful. And it tells every section that any lodge that was back from back then, it tells every section that they were in. And it shows over time how they moved and if they merged and stuff like that. Also, the website has a history of the OA Sesh, which is from the beginning of the OA Sesh to now. It starts out with the black background and the white stripe, and it progresses into the red arrow with fletchings and everything. Another cool little part about the website is it shows nameplate and license plates people have taken a picture of, maybe they're personal, and they posted it out there, and it's got different stuff, like one of them I saw from Idaho, which was Mateo, which I thought was very good. So, if you need to find out anything about any OA section, head on over to oasections.com.
Yeah, in this episode, I'm going to say a little bit about how to check the revision history on each article. So what we're going to do is you go to skydashing.net, you click on the wiki logo, and you log in. If you don't have an account, you can create an account. They're absolutely free. So you create your account, and then you log in. And then you're going to read any article on the wiki. And if you look at the very top, there's going to be a series of what look like tabs, like folder tabs. There's one for article, there's one for discussion, there's one for edit, and there's one for history. And right now we're going to click on the history one. And you click on that, and what it'll pull up is the revision history for that individual article. So some articles may have only 2 or 3 revisions, some articles may have hundreds of revisions. And what this does is if you look at each line in the revision history, it'll show you, it has a radio button, that little circle that you click on is a radio button, and then a time and a date and a username. And then a couple of links about that user. There's that user's talk page, which is a page where you can go and you can leave messages for that user, for example. And then there's a list, a link to that user's contributions. So you can see what that user has contributed throughout the entire Scout History Wiki. And then after that, there's a little note that when they made that revision, there's a revision note that you can put in, and that's where that note shows up. So the really great part of this is the radio buttons that are next to the time. You can click on a radio button for any revision, and then all of the articles, or all of the revisions above that revision, will have 2 radio buttons. So you want to click the left-hand radio button for, like, an earlier revision, and then the right-hand for a newer revision. Then you want to click on select, compare selected revisions. And what that will show you is, line for line, the changes that were made between the bottom revision and the top revision of the two that you selected. So let's say you made a revision to a Lodge insignia guide. And since you've made that revision, there have been 10 or 12 or 14 different revisions. So what you can do is you can select your revision at the bottom, which will have your username next to it. And then you can select the revision at the very top, which is the current version of the article as it's shown on the wiki. So you select those two and you hit compare select versions, and it'll show you every single change that has been made to that article since you last revised it. And what that'll do is that'll help you see, it'll help you identify what's been changed so that you can keep up with it. If anybody has put in any erroneous data so that you can correct it, or if anybody has come back and corrected something that you put there, or if you're just wanting to see, you know, basically who made what contributions to each article, this is exactly how you would do that. And some of the usernames, and if you go back to the revision history, some of the usernames will be red, and some of the usernames will be blue. The ones that are blue are the people who have gone and they've made what are called user pages, which you can access at the very top once you log in. You'll see your username, and it'll be a link. You need to click on it. It'll take you to your user page, and you can edit that, and you can put anything you want. So I know Ben's done one. I've done one. Tim sort of has done one. But if you click on that, the idea is that it'll help you get a better understanding of who that person is. So if you go to mine, for example, say, hi, I'm Chris Brightwell. I'm a co-founder of the Scout History Project, blah, blah, blah. And it'll go on to tell you that I was a Cub Scout, I'm an Eagle Scout, I was a Lodge Chief for Coosa Lodge. So if you see me making a whole bunch of Coosa edits and you're wondering, who is this guy? You can click on my link, on my user page link, and figure out a little bit about who I am, and so you kind of understand where I'm coming from when I make the edits. So, in a nutshell, that's it. That's a quick look at the revision history. If you have any comments or any problems or any questions, or if you have a tip that you would like to see, email me, chris@clothtalk.com, and I'll respond to that as quick as I can. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. That's right. We've got the trainery information coming up for the entire month of February and the beginning of March. And starting off, we have the 10th Annual Western Washington Trainery, which will be held on February 17th at the Mercer Island Presbyterian Church, which is located halfway between Seattle and Bellevue, Washington. Next up, we have the Lodge No. 2 Sakowit East Coast Trainery, which will be held the weekend of February 23rd and 24th in Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. Also that weekend in California, we have the Watavi Lodge 13 Trainery and Auction, which will be held at the Orange County Council Service Center in Santa Ana, California. Also that weekend, we have the 5th Annual Twin Cities Area Trainery, which will be held at the Glendale United Methodist Church in Savage, Minnesota. And that right there will finish us out for February. And coming up at the very beginning of March, we have the Starved Rock Area Scouter Swap Meet, which will be held the weekend of March 2nd and 3rd, at the Knights of Columbus Hall in LaSalle, Illinois. Also coming up that weekend, the 2nd and 3rd, we have the Southeast Missouri 12th Annual Trainery, which will be held at the VFW Hall in Cape Girard, Missouri. Also that weekend of the 2nd and 3rd, we'll have the 2007 Colonial Williamsburg Trainery, which will be held at the Best Western at the Patrick Henry Inn in Williamsburg, Virginia. And last but not least, we have the 2007 World Scout Collectors Meeting, which will also be held on the weekend of March 2nd and 3rd, and this will be held at the Gilwell Park in London, England. So for all you international scouters out there that listen to the program, you should definitely try and make it out there. It sounds like it'd be an extremely interesting event to attend. Well, guys, this will wrap it up for the February and beginning of March trainery updates. If you have any more information you'd like to get out on the site for your trainery in your area or any other ones locally that you know about, feel free to hop on over to the wiki. You can search trainerys and it should be the one titled trainery update. Feel free to input your information there, or if you're not comfortable, shoot me an email at brandon@clothtalk.com and I'll help you out any way I can. All right, everybody, thanks for your support and we look forward to hearing from you.
Well, with us now online is Ben Killen and someone that I've known for a while, James Tarbox. James is currently a second-term chief, the first second-term chief of Coosa Lodge, and right here in our own backyard, and I'd like to take this time to welcome James Tarbox to Cloth Talk. Welcome, James. Tell us about your OA story. Tell us about your scouting.
I've been involved in OA, or I was inducted into OA back in August of 2001, and that was the Sequoia ordeal. I think it was ended up being the largest ordeal that KISS has ever had. I think we invested 250 people. And then, so I went to my ordeal, and the next event I came back to was the 2001 Fall Fellowship at Camp Onatopka. And that was a pretty fun event. But the problem was Travis and I didn't really have any friends in OA per se. So that was pretty much the end of our OA involvement for about a year. We came back August ordeal 2002 at Camp Sequoia. And that's where I got my brotherhood and served as an Olingamat. And then by then, we had a couple of friends who wanted to start coming to OA events with us. And September ordeal 2002 at Camp Jackson was really our first event to start getting involved. A good friend of ours who went to the Jamboree with us, Jim Ellison, who we all know, he's section chief from CUSA. He was, I think, our secretary, something like that, at that point. And he said, guys, we need some help working in Trading Post. And so we started working in Trading Post that event and stuck with, that's how we got involved. We worked with the Trading Post for probably about 2.5-3 years. That was a good relationship that started that event. And also something that started at that event, was our, working with ceremonies. We worked with a, helped set up a brotherhood ceremony with, I guess, the first KISA Brotherhood team that we had. I don't know. I wasn't that involved back then to know what was going on. But that's where we started helping out over at Camp Jackson. And then came back Fall Fellowship 2002 and ran the Trading Post. And then basically until from September ordeal, September Fall Fellowship 2002 to Fall Fellowship 2004, my main role with the OA and KISA Lodge was running the Trading Post.
A couple of things I think I need to say just for clarification to the audience is you have an identical twin named Travis, and if you don't know the two, you're always confused as to who you're talking to. I can actually tell the difference now. I thought one thing you did, working in the Trading Post, that really got you kind of well-known. I mean, everybody knew you were Travis because everybody goes through the Trading Post. And that I mean, you know, the face or the twin faces there, everybody kind of knew who you were. And I think that's a good example of how to get involved in the lodge and how for people to know who you are so that when you step up in front of that group, you know, everybody's seen you or something. Working registration would be another way. Just actually any kind of service, you know, even serving food in the kitchen and speaking to the folks as you go through. Just something like that where you can be seen is an excellent way to get your face out there if no one else, if not your name. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah. It was easier for me to campaign in 2004 Fall Fellowship for Vice Chief of Inductions and also for Lodge Chief because I knew everybody. I'd gladly taken all their money and they knew me and knew that I worked hard, and so it was easier.
Well, as someone who's obviously worked in a long time in the Trading Post, you've seen a lot of patches come and go throughout your time. What can you tell us about your own patch collecting and what you collect, things you're interested in, and even maybe some about some of your favorite KISA patches that are part of our lodge's history?
Yeah, I have seen a lot of patches run through the Trading Post. I want to kind of start back from the beginning. My favorite event patch, which we still had some of it and were selling when I started working in Trading Post, was the 2001 Fall Fellowship patch. Because that was my first real event. And if you've seen that patch, I'm looking at it right now. It's a very, I guess you can call it a pretty patch. dark, rich colors. It's still my favorite Fall Fellowship patch that we've ever had. And moving up through the patches, when I got in, we were already on the S5, which is the black lettered riding Kusa Lodge on the patch. They were still selling the S1, but they were basically almost gone with the almost done with the S1s. And after Fall Fellowship 2001, I don't think they sold them again. I don't know. Looking at patches from the beginning, let's see. I guess when we first got in Fall Fellowship 2002, when we first started working there, we were coming out with probably the red border jacket patch. That was our Kusa's first attempt at a back patch. And we sold a whole lot of those. And also in 2002, we started selling the rockers to go around the back patches, and had a rocker for every event. Not every ordeal, but instead of every ordeal, it said 2002 ordeals. And had one for Merillac and Conclave and whatnot, every event you went to. As far as patch trading goes, at that point, I was still kind of in the lighter side of patch trading. I still really am. As far as things that I collect, I mainly collect Kusa items just because this is my lodge. I haven't bought my 10 a year for a couple of years now, so I'm starting to run out of lodge flaps. But I mainly collect Kusa things. Where I started was 2001 National Jamboree. Started just trading CFPs. And I didn't really want to do OA flaps there because I was not in the OA, and I didn't really have any OA flaps to trade because since I was not in OA after 2001 Jamboree, I was not eligible to buy the Kusa National Jambo flaps, so I didn't get to really trade those. But probably about maybe after the 2002 Fall Fellowship, I started trading a little more. And I would be one of those ones who would stay up in the dining hall on Saturday night till 2 a.m., trying to find the patches that I wanted. And I've met a lot of people through that. Made some good deals with people. But I probably did that for a couple of years. Long about the time that I got elected to lodge office, it kind of stopped. Because I really didn't have time and don't have time to pull out the patches and set up and or walk around and trade patches with people anymore. I don't know. I don't really regret that. I love patches, but I collect what we make, and that's pretty much the extent of my patch collecting right now. Maybe in a few years, but I'm more interested in being a lodge officer and making sure things run smoothly than adding to my personal collection right now. But maybe in a few years I'll step out and do some more trading.
You know, there's nothing like, and I can remember those days, and that's still one of my favorite parts of going to any kind of scouting event is those social times that we have just sat around and not so much talk myself, but listen to the other people. It's just fantastic. And James, I guess when I was your age, I really do wish I could go back and listen to a lot of those Cracker Barrel, those older gentlemen in the red jack shirts talking. And I wish I had my iPod back then so I had record of some of those conversations, because all that's been lost. All that's been lost. It really has.
One question I had for you, Chief, is as an old lodge chief myself, I sort of maybe have a little insight as to what you know, what your life is like with OA and all that stuff. I remember when I was lodge chief, of course, I would run the LECs just as any chief would, and I used to always be weary of any time someone used the F word in a OA meeting, and by F word I mean flap or patch, the P word. Do you have any stories about LEC meetings where heated discussions were caused over patches or flaps? I know those were always, for me, times when people really got emotional about things. Do you have any stories like that?
Not really. We're always making patches, of course. We probably approve 4 or more a year for events and whatnot. Sometimes we'll get a couple of designs, and one faction of the lodge officers likes one design and another faction likes the other. So you've got to come to an agreement. But it's really not that heated. Everybody realizes we got to get a patch made. We got this event coming up. Let's get something done. Really, people aren't too personal about the patch design, so it's not that big a deal, really. And if it does get heated, what we normally will do is just table it to the next meeting or something to that effect. Table it to the next meeting or give Key 3 approval to pick a patch design if it's going to be an ugly conversation.
So let me get this straight. You were a member of a chapter that issued a non-approved patch?
Yes, I was a member of a chapter that issued a non-approved patch, but I really didn't have anything to do with it. At the time, one of my really close adult friends that was my scoutmaster at Jamboree and was later on my advisor when I was vice chief of induction, Don Russell, he was chapter advisor. And another good friend of mine, Jerry Kiker, who was lodge chief the year before I was elected, he had just been elected chapter chief, and they didn't really know the regulations, or I don't know, I don't want to get into really
I don't expect
what
to
happened.
I don't expect you to either.
It's funny, actually, because Chris Brightwell, who's also part of the Cloth Talk team, he was actually the lodge chief, and if it ever comes up in discussion, his feathers still get ruffled about that fashion. I just think it's funny. Because, you know, it's one of those things that happen, and, you know, that's the way lodge rules sort of get established, is things like that happen, and people decide, okay, we don't want this to happen again. So it's just funny, though, to me, because it's one of those things that if it comes up around Chris, you know that he'll have something to say about it.
Yeah, I try not to mention it when I'm Chris.
So, James, what are some of your favorite patches?
Well, as I mentioned before, we have the 2001 Fall Fellowship patch. Just a really nice patch. Lots of color, lots of detail, in my opinion. That's just my favorite because it was my first event. Other event patches, maybe not my favorite designs, but that mean a lot to me, is the Fall Fellowship 2005, where I was elected Lodge Chief for the first time, the Sash Bash, and then Lodge Fall Fellowship 2006, second time being elected Lodge Chief. Cool thing about the Fall Fellowship 2005 is it glows in the dark. But CUSA's made 2 or 3 glow-in-the-dark patches, so we like doing those. Another patch that I really like is the 2003 event pass. It's probably about 7 or 8 inches long and 3 inches wide. And there's just a lot of detail put in this. It's a totem pole with the large shield and WWW across the bottom. It's just, I think it's our one of our nicest patches that CUSA has ever produced, in my opinion. Not just because it's the first event patch I ever bought, but just because I think it is one of the nicest patches we've ever put out. 2004 event patch was also very good looking, with the war canoe and Indian shooting an arrow over it. That was a nice one. I really like all the event passes because it means you're there for the year. It means you're pretty active. Usually that's what it means if you buy it. It means you're showing up for everything. Another patch that I really like is a round patch that we issued in 2005 at Ordeals when I was lodged by Shooting Inductions. We had the lodge, it's the lodge's 5th anniversary and BSA's 95th anniversary, and we made a special patch to commemorate that. And it's a very nice patch. It has the shield and the hawk in the middle. I think it comes off of the patch that's on the Brotherhood neckerchief, that same design. Let me see. Yeah, it's basically the same design as that. But I remember that because it's basically it was my event that it was issued at. So I remember that patch pretty well. I like the ceremony team patch. You know, I've earned 2 of them now. I'm very proud of what I've done ceremonially. As Mateyu on both pre-ordeal and ordeal, and then Vigil Honor Ceremonialist. So ceremony team patch means a lot to me. Very fond memories of showing up at ordeals, and basically we would go in the woods all day and practice ceremonies, and just real good time hanging out at Comer and Sequoia and helping the other team. I wasn't performing then, but when we still did ordeals at Camp Jackson. Then more recently, the CUSA Shows participation patch. I think I'm one of 10 or 15 people so far to get that, I fulfilled the requirements when we went on the camp promotion trip. Let's see, Zhu Kim and Chris Brightwell and Matt Sheets and myself, and we went on that week-long tour of the council summer camps and made the camp promotion video for them. I remember that trip. It was kind of like a big jump into the OA world, in my opinion, because it's like a welcome to the family kind of thing, and then next fall fellowship, I was elected lodge chief. Something else that happened that summer, which I've seen a lot of, we had National Jamboree that summer, and we CUSA issued a Red Border 2005 National Jamboree flap, and then which is listed as the S19 on Blue Book, and then more recently, maybe about a year ago, a black porter of the same patch keeps showing up, and then last weekend at LLDC, somebody came up and asked me, "Is this a lodge issued patch?" And I said, "No, it's not a lodge issued patch." And then one showed up on eBay this week, and I didn't catch the end of the auction, but at 3 days left, it was at $50 for one of these black-bordered National Jamboree, not issued by the lodge, flaps. So that's kind of a cool thing that's going on. And then probably our most detailed and most colorful flap ever is our new Brotherhood flap. Just a whole lot of color. A great scene of the hawk flying on the lake, being hit by sunlight and cliffs, and it's just a really nice patch, or flap, I should say. If we could buy more than one event, I would put it on my uniform. But those are my favorite patches that actually mean a lot to me. there's probably more in my box, but those are the ones that stick out when I think of OA and things that I've done.
Yeah, that black bordered jambo flap. I think we've talked to John Pinnell a little bit about that because there was an entry on his blog. He and Bob McCandless both have talked about this, not the, that patch, but this happening. And we probably think that's what you call a chang, which means they're probably overruns that were made in when the originals were made, or not, but anyway. And from what I've seen, the quality of that patch, the actual stitching in that patch, is not quite as good as the real patch. And we're not the only ones having those problems, and it is right aggravating to have something like that out that is not an official issue of the lodge, and then everybody clamors to get it, which is just going to cause it to happen again and again and again. And Coos is not the only victim of this. It would not be fair to say that at all. It is something that is just happening across the hobby right now. And the good thing about OA Images Online is you can go there and see immediately that it really is not an official issue. If someone from the lodge is actually taking a look at the collection out there on OA Images.
It's an interesting thing, this sort of trend of fake patches, and people sort of pay a lot of money to collect them. And the sad part about that is it reinforces that behavior to create those things to sort of fool people. But yeah, it's very interesting, and it's definitely worth discussing.
Okay, what's Kusa got planned? I know there's something called the AIS coming up. Tell us a little bit about that, and Conclave's coming up, and I know you've got big plans for that. It just sounds like a great program year for Kusa between the service days, the hawk days that are out there, and the ordeals coming up. Just quick, give us a brief rundown of the calendar and maybe some of the great events that are coming from Kusa this year.
Okay, Saturday, February 17th. First Hawk Day at Camp Comer. Basically, what we're trying to do is the council has Beaver Days, and Coosa is going to have Hawk Days at three of our council properties. And then March the 17th, Coosa One Day of Service, will have three sites. Birmingham, Huntsville, and Anniston will be doing work with Habitat for Humanity, Birmingham Outreach Incorporated, associations or businesses like that. And then March 23rd through March 25th, I guess I'd say one of our two big events of the year, the Coosa Lodge American Indian Seminar. Last year we held this and just started great vibes throughout the lodge. And then this year, our Vice Chief of Native American Affairs, Charles Backus, and his advisor, Julian Simmons, just doing a great job. We have trainers coming from Georgia, trainers coming from Tennessee, and also as far away as Cleveland, Ohio, to help teach and give advice and opinions on the American Indian side of our organization. Ceremonies and dance, and even more than that, working on regalia and beading, and I look into the American Indian culture. So we're looking for a great weekend there. We've invited people from all over the Southeast to be there. So hopefully this can be a real big breakthrough for Coosa Lodge. As far as our event goes, hopefully we can get a lot of out-of-town people to come in. And then Conclave, April 27th through 29th of this year, Camp Sydney Dew in Armouchi, Georgia, hosted by Wagyu Lee Lodge. Looking to have a great time. I've personally been to the camp and inspected where we're going to have our campsite. We've got a great location picked out, or Wagyu has picked us a great location. Looking to have a good time. And we have our ordeal season starting the weekend after that, I believe. Yes, yeah, the weekend after that, March or May 4th through 6th. we'll have our first ordeal. Hopefully get some good people in. And then we'll have one second weekend in August, and then another one second weekend in September, 2007 Fall Fellowship at Camp Comer. So it's looking to be a great year. People say, well, we don't have a national event, so it's not going to be just a stellar year. But Kusa's got some stuff planned, and I think it's going to be an awesome year. Hopefully we'll have a lot of people come out and get involved. That's what we're looking at for this year. And if you're from Kusa, I encourage you to come out. If you're not from Kusa and want to drop by, you can email me at chief@kusa50.org, and we'll see what we can do for you visiting a lodge event.
There you go, chief@kusa50.org. If you going to be in the greater Alabama Council area, give the chief, drop the chief a note. Ben, any other questions?
Yeah, I just appreciate you coming on and telling us about your patch collection and all that. We may have already touched on this, but one question we ask all our guests is about two patches that you would have in your collection or seek out. What is one patch that you have in your collection that's the most important to you or holds the most value, regardless of if it's monetary value or not? And then what is one patch that you don't have in your collection that you'd like to add to your collection?
So your first question, I'll give you two answers, one sentimental and one monetary. As far as monetary goes, the Kusa Lodge Bullion that came out at 2005 LLDC. As far as sentimental, I would probably say one we haven't mentioned yet is the Delegate Flap of the 2006 NOAC. That was just a great event. And I had a great time being the youth contingent leader and seeing all the success that our lodge was able to have at NOAC. So that those two patches mean a lot. And then as far as a patch that I wish I had, I'll give you two answers again. Currently I don't have the first visual flap of Kusa, the M1. I'm working on some deals with some people to try to get one. And then the other would be the first event pass from Kusa, which is very rare. I think I've seen it go for about $700 on eBay, so a little out of a student's price range and negative income. So I don't think I'll be getting either one of those soon, but we'll see what happens.
James, thank you very much for taking some time off on a Saturday. I know you're at the university, and that's always a busy place to join us here on Cloth Talk, and we will probably be seeing you at some Kusa events, and I really look forward to another year of great service from Kusa Lodge. Thank you very much, James. And with us right now is John Pinnell. John, how are you doing?
Oh, fine. You're celebrating a pleasant afternoon of another Carolina victory.
All right, another Carolina victory. That sounds great.
Yeah, March is coming soon.
Oh, yeah, the madness of March. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what's happening out in your world of the collecting community these days?
Well, Bob McCandless and I have both been writing, Bob McCandless up in Pittsburgh way, have both been writing lately about chains, the chain type fate.
Yeah, I saw that. It's a great article from both of you. Absolutely, absolutely great. I thought both of you went just, slightly different directions, but, you know, that's the truth. And if you haven't read this, everyone needs to run out to John's blog at blog.oaimages.com. And there's a link to the other blog there, too. So you might want to pause for a moment and go read Bob's and then come back and read John's, too. And great suggestion there. Chains, of course. What exactly is a chain? Let's explain that real quick.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't define it, because even collectors themselves don't define it quite the same way. Chain was Howard Chang, I believe was his first name, is a person over in Taiwan who does embroidery of patches. And many of the patches that are made for scouts are either produced in Taiwan or subcontracted out. And he is able to get in touch with the embroiderers there and offer overruns or just outright fakes of stuff that's produced there. So they've been collectively... So the whole category of overruns and Asian-made fakes have been collectively dubbed Changs after his last name.
Ah, okay. And obviously, I've noticed from some of the stuff that I follow a little closely, mostly in my home lodge, that a lot of times what happens with overruns, well, I guess when you make so many patches, you know that you're going to have quality issues with so many. So you make an overrun, and the quality sometimes of what I've noticed is a Chang, which, or what I call a Chang, a fake, may have a different color border or something like that, but the quality isn't quite there because those are the ones that the inspection process weeded out. Is that somewhat right?
Those would be the true overruns, yes. An embroiderer or a patch company, whether in the United States or overseas, in order to be sure that they're able to deliver the quantity the lodge ordered, will make a percentage more, allowing for some spoilage, defects. And if they don't, and the defects they'll throw away normally, because they don't even have any value to anyone as manufacturer samples of the defects.
Right.
But sometimes they won't have as much spoilage as they thought they would, and those are the overruns.
Right. And then you've got the out and out fakes or counterfeits, which are done, and I hate to say it, but done from like images. And sometimes you'll find images that are not really great quality. And, you know, you may have seen this actually from your site. You have thousands of images. Have you ever seen something that you can pretty much peg and go, you know, maybe that really is? It looks like it came from this image on my site or something like
that? Yes, I can. In fact, this was what started my part of the article was. Another collector asked me that, can someone make fakes based upon using an image from my site? And what can be done to stop it? He was concerned. He wanted to send me an image of something out his way, which is very rare and I don't have, and he was concerned it would turn up as a fake. The short answer was, well, no, yes, they can, and no, we can't really stop it. I know of at least one instance where that has happened. There was Onoyoshi 34. There's a jacket patch there, where I believe the original has a silver mylar border, and it's like a 6-inch round. But the image on my site wasn't too good, and it was much smaller than the other jacket patches. So there was a fake that turned up with a gray border, and it was 23 inches round.
Okay, well, yeah, that's...
So he didn't know enough about what he was... He didn't know enough about how patches were classified to know...
Really,
how to fake what he was faking.
Yeah, to really do a good job of it. Yeah, and I get, you know, you can always make something from a digitized image. In this day and time, you know, they take pretty much the artwork and digitize it. I understand they put it through some pretty difficult software to, you know, it's not just they take your picture and then or take a scan and it falls out of the loom. Not at all. It's actually vectorized, and the difference between raster graphics and vector graphics is vector is mathematical. So it doesn't matter whether it's the size of a patch or the size of a billboard, the actual detail will be the same on a vector graphic. Whereas a scan, if you've got something small and you try to blow it up, it obviously gets horrible in quality. But yeah. Most patches, as I understand, computerized patches are made from vector graphics. So I guess if you've got that software, you could vectorize anything. But and then there are companies that will take designs and vectorize it for you. So, you know, even if you've got a patch and somebody scans it off the uniform or whatever, basically it gets down to a scout is trustworthy.
Right. And unfortunately, a lot of people, especially get overseas making patches, well, they're not scouts. And to them, it's just, you know, they look at eBay the same way we do.
Yes.
And if they see a patch they made for someone as a subcontractor and sold it to whoever the general contractor was, you know, for 50 cents a piece, and they see it turning around selling eBay for $100.
Right.
Well, the answer to what they can do is really simple.
Right.
They see money.
Right. And the market drives that. So what's the solution? I thought y'all had some great solutions, and I think in the future you will see some solutions. Obviously, One solution that kind of is has a big hole in it is the security backing. But if you have to send it to the manufacturer to be used, then you kind of defeat the purpose. Yeah.
Security backing is used by DSA National, and it's used by a few other companies. I think Krellman uses it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Stodger uses it as well. He uses a backing of sorts as well. The problem is if companies using security backings were to subcontract out the work, they subcontract the security backing as well, well, you're in the same position.
Right.
Yeah. Where I would think that if a company is subcontracting out the embroidery, they maintain control over the security backing phase.
Right. I liked your suggestion of a microfiber or micro-imprinted thread, much like you see or kind of like we see on the dollar bills. I think that's something...
No one has done that yet, but no. I thought it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think probably right now it may be a little prohibitively expensive to have that much of that kind of thread made, but perhaps not. I don't know. That's certainly a great idea, and I think you'll see that. I think also something, taking it one step further, that could be done in at a local area. In other words, you could get the order of patches in, and you could actually tag them, and there's a variety of methods to tag it with what are they calling a RID ID tag. And those will be so small eventually. They're not right now, but they will be so small. Those could be scanned, and you could keep up with the database of who actually purchased that if you wanted to go that far.
If some lodges feel have done something much more low-tech than that, that goes back decades, you'll see old patches where someone will have written on the back of them in magic marker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So number 75 of 100.
Right. Yeah. Well, there are some, there are solutions, but I think the conclusion that you guys both reached was, when you are... preparing something like a limited edition, something that's going to be a premier patch or a premium patch, perhaps using the cheapest manufacturing process and person is not the best solution.
No. That is very definitely true. Now, I would think if you're doing something that's really, you intend it to be something really special, either the people who have done some great service to the lodge, or as a fundraiser, where you're selling at a high premium, it's supposed to be something really special, I would think going to the cheapest contractor is just not wise. It's also just sending a bad image, a bad impression to your members.
Oh, yes. Are there manufacturers that still use the Swiss loom technology here?
I think so. I couldn't tell you for sure, but I think it could still be done.
Oh, yeah.
And there's other manufacturers out there. And I'll use Krellman as an example, that a lot of their work tends to be very detailed.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Lighthouse flaps in Catawba 459, for as an example, they tend to do some very detailed work, which would be very tough to fake.
Right. Well, that's a great idea, great suggestions. And once again, that's blog at oaimages.com. A great way to get in touch with the whole Cloth Talk gang is just to drop an email to clothtalk@clothtalk.com. And that goes out to just about everybody on the gang here at Cloth Talk. So that's a real easy way to hit us all. And we're kind of scattered all over the place. North Carolina, New York City, Huntsville, Alabama, Florence, Alabama, and Ben Daniel's actually going back to Alaska. He took a job in Alaska, so he's in Colorado right now, but headed back to Alaska. That's Cloth Talk at clothtalk.com. That'll cover the whole gambit with everybody. Well, Ben, that wraps it up for another Cloth Talk, man. I'll tell you, it's been fun this week, but I tell you, the next couple of weeks, be sure you come back, because I think we've got somebody lined up that just can't... Now I see why those people on real television, real radio, say, well, we've got this guy lined up, but I can't say right now. Or can we say? I'll let you decide.
Well, I don't know. I would just say that he's one of the major collectors in OA and all of Scout Collection. And it's really, you know, we say this all the time, but it's really one of the best episodes that, we've recorded. We actually had a chance to record ahead of time, and it's so much good stuff that it's going to take us a little while to put it all together. But do come back next time, because it's really going to be a treat. No doubt about it. I'm really excited about it, if you can't tell, and that's because it just turned out so well, and I think that you'll probably agree.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call him a collector anymore. I would say historian, scouting historian.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. As always, we'd like to thank Daniel Hodge for the musical part of Cloth Talk. He does a fantastic job. Daniel has a website out there, and we'll put that. Actually, it's on the information panel there on the Cloth Talk website. I'd like to thank Daniel for that. I'd like to thank Chris for his wiki tip.
In addition to all the work Chris does on the wiki tip, he also kind of manages all the back end of our technology. So if you go to the website and it's really messed up, he's the one you need to get onto. but no, he does a great job, and we couldn't do any of this without him. Thanks to him. Thanks to John Pinnell for all your help. Thanks to our guests. Thanks to everyone that is listening right now. Thank you to you for taking the time to listen. And we appreciate everything and hope to see you back again in 2 weeks.
That's right. Thanks for listening. By the way, who is Beep Beep? We're just not sure. Brandon, thanks again. Thank you for listening. If you're from Hungary, France, the United Kingdom, Germany, the Netherlands, Thailand, Colombia, Brazil, Japan, India, Sweden, and, of course, the outlying U.S. military. Thank you very much. Hey, the U.S. military, we appreciate your service. Thank you. This is Cloth Talk, bringing you the history of scouting through collectibles.